You're listening to Wondering Jews with Josh and Roy. Hi, I'm Roy.
And I'm Josh. This is the podcast where two youngish Jewish dads get baked and wonder what it means to be a Jew today. Tonight, on episode 89, we get ripped from the headlines. After that, we agree to disagree about Chanukah.
Chanukah.
Then we share our tweet of the year and wrap things up with our 2023 predictions.
Get the prognosticatorizer out. But before we get into all of that goodness, a special thank you to our Patreon supporters, our patrons on the Patreon, and also one particular patron, Neil, who left us this lovely message.
Guys, the Dr. Katz style video you guys did last month was amazing. That show had been a favorite of mine for years, and I had to show it to my brother over Thanksgiving, and we were both dying. We loved it so much. One of the best Dr. Katz episodes ever is the scene where he tried to explain Passover and why he had matzah in his lunch to the McCarthy twins. Your video totally nails the whole vibe. Thanks for all the laughs, Neil.
Thanks, Neil. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it. What the fuck is Neil talking about, Josh?
Well, he's talking about our new YouTube channel where we released our first ever animated Wondering Jews short. All you gotta do is click the link in the show notes and it'll take you to the YouTube video, and it's styled in the style of Dr. Katz, and it's very funny.
If you don't know Dr. Katz, look it up. If you do know Dr. Katz, I think you'll dig this video. It's our first entree into animation, and we're pretty damn excited about it. So, Neil, thank you for the kind words. If you are not yet a Patreon supporter, click on the link in the show notes. Become a supporter. $1 a month, $4 a month. You pick the amount. We appreciate it regardless.
So, Roy, tell me about the strain you picked up this week.
Well, Josh, I was at a dispensary that I used to go to all the time when I lived closer to that one. And there were, a plethora of joints, really a joint cornucopia. But there was one particular set of the menu that I had never really experienced before. It's a brand called Tokyo Starfish, and they make joint two-packs. And this, the Tokyo Starfish name plus the logo plus the everything else plus the price point, everything just felt right about it. But what felt really right about it was the strain name. Chem Fuego.
What got to you about Chem Fuego?
I don't know. Maybe it's the bilingualism of it. Maybe it's the promise of fire. Maybe it's just, what the strain names do sometimes when they capture your imagination. Maybe it was a THC content level. Maybe it was, a blend of things. But there's something about this package and this strain name that just jumped out at me. And I thought, that is exactly what I think we need. And the guy seemed very interested in our show. So I left a few business cards at that dispensary. And hopefully other patrons of that shop will pick it up and tune into the show.
So this Chem Fuego tested at 27.36% THC and it's 2.65% terpenes. It's packaged like an Apple phone charger.
Yeah, it's very, very tight little packaging. The joint itself is a kind of a cool shape for a joint. I mean, it's a joint, but it's more like kind of the cigarette shape, less like the cone and less like the twisty end. It's just a very sleek package. It's a very sleek looking joint. And so I'm excited to try it out, but I'm curious what the Internet of Internets says about Chem Fuego.
Chem Fuego is a cross between Sour Diesel, Headband, and Chem Dog. It's an invigorating sativa. Consumers can expect to have a cerebral experience coupled with a light, heavy-bodied feeling. This fast-acting strain delivers energizing cerebral effects. Chem Fuego has an aroma with notes of earth, herbal tea, citrus, and light skunk. The citrus and tea notes are very noticeable in its taste.
Whoa, that is a hell of a description. Flavor notes, tasting notes. It's like a wine. It's like a wine label. It's what I'm talking about. Also, I just want to say, Sour Diesel, one of the all-time classic strains, and Headband, one of my all-time favorite strains. So if that's the ancestry of this weed, we're starting off in a good place.
Well, I think we should start off in a good place and spark these up and be right back. So what did you think of this joint, Roy?
Actually, let me just exhale this breath real quick. That's a really, really pleasant joint to pull on.
Yeah, mine burned so evenly, and it like was real like smooth to inhale. It was awesome.
I strongly agree. Wow. Very impressive. Hits fast. Let me say, this is a fast-hitting strain.
That's what the description said it would do, but it's working.
You know, I listen to the description read every single episode. I think I just get so caught up in like the prose of the description because I am a writer. And so I get kind of caught up in like the words they're choosing and the adjectives they're selecting and the, does it make sense? Is it funny? Does it feel like it was written by a robot? And then I was like, oh, fuck, what did it actually say? I think I missed it.
Yeah.
Forest for the trees, Josh.
Well, I have a confession to make.
Yeah.
And that's that I've been a little under the weather and I actually haven't smoked weed in about a week.
Oh my gosh. So you've been on a hiatus.
Yeah. And so it is fast acting and I don't know.
Man, this has got to be hitting you like a freight train right now.
It is, man. I'm like baked.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, I have not been on a hiatus and this thing hit quick. I can only imagine, you know, your tolerances must be like nothing right now, which is fun. Well, maybe that was the gift of being sick, is that you got to like take a forced hiatus and then get to really appreciate getting baked again.
Yeah.
So congratulations, Mazel Tov, on your bakedom.
Thanks, Roy. I appreciate it.
I'm just here to help, man. I'm also here to pontificate. About what, Josh, you might ask? Some headlines.
Ripped from the headlines.
The first headline, Roy, comes to us from CNN. And the headline is, rats blamed for eating 500 kilograms of cannabis stored by Indian police. This was bound to happen, Roy.
I have so many thoughts about this story, Josh. I cannot wait to get into it.
So the cops basically have like you know, 700 kilos of cannabis, and they just kind of store it. And it like rains down there, and so there's rats all over the place. Like, what did they expect would happen?
One, if rats are eating that much cannabis, maybe they shouldn't be that hard to catch. You know, like how fast are these rats moving?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about like a whole like colony of stoned rats. It has to be, they're pretty obvious, right? I mean, you could tell the stoned ones and then you put them under arrest and perpetuate the drug war to another species.
You know, I just don't think that people are really around the rats to catch them that often.
I think that if I were a cop in India who liked weed, I would definitely blame the rats for a bunch of weed missing. Maybe there's a sort of a redistribution model going on here somewhere. Clearly, like, cannabis should not be illegal in India, just like it should not be illegal here. These people shouldn't be criminalized for this obvious commodity.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, I just think it's a little fishy, a little ratty to blame rats. Nobody's caught one of these drug smuggling rats. Nobody's caught a rat that's totally baked and just like hanging out.
Oh, you don't think there's video evidence? I mean, it is like a police storage locker.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's very suspicious. And then after the case, the guy was like, no. There were never any rats. It just rains a lot here. It's like, so you guys have buildings, right? The rain doesn't go in the building, but I guess it does.
Well, I mean, so what should happen here? Because this has come to light because, you know, the courts have asked the police to produce this evidence and now the police can't produce it. So like, this is really the police's fault. You know, this is a cover up. The police are blaming the rats.
That's what I'm saying. And the courts are like, hey, if you're going to confiscate all that weed, you got to keep it. And they're like, oh, we can't. We can't control the rats.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. All right. Because you are cops, right? I mean, like, you are armed. You have access to lethal means if you want to go that route. Seems a little unnecessary. And what should happen is they shouldn't be fucking busting people and confiscating weed to begin with.
Yeah.
That's what's wrong. That's the specificity rule applied here. They're confiscating too much weed. They're just, you know, they're apprehending it left and right because it's, I don't know, let's say a gigantic worldwide market that needs to be, you know, fed. But anyway, blame the rats. I don't like it at all.
I was going to blame CNN.
Yeah, CNN. I'm good with blaming CNN.
Oh, yeah, blame information. I like it.
Seems like a safe position to take in this day and age.
Let me tell you about our next headline, Roy. And the headline is from Israel Today. And the headline is, Israeli rabbi says he's already holding meetings with the Messiah. This is a big deal.
I mean, what? So remember in math, you would like to take like any 2 points and then you'd find like the halfway that you'd half the distance, and then you could take the next 2 points and you could half the distance again. And so you could sort of infinitely half the distance so that you were actually approaching the point, but you would never reach it because you'd always just half it again.
Yeah.
I feel like this story is that for the Moshiach is coming story, the narrative of the coming of a Messiah. And it's like, okay, people want to believe it so hard. They want to be able to prove to other people how hard they believe it. And I feel like the Messiah, to our knowledge, has not arrived. It does not look messianic currently. But to half the distance again from like fervently believing that it will happen to it has happened is this half midpoint of like, it is happening and I'm already talking to the guy. You know?
Yeah.
It's like a negotiated halfway point. It's like, okay, I'm going to split the distance between where we are and where we want to be.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty clever, but it's also a little troublesome. You know, I don't know. I understand there's lots of rabbis out there and I'm not technically one of them.
I mean, I'm glad that I'm not the person who has to talk to the Messiah, because that would be really stressful. I'm glad that there are people who like think that it should be them. Just because they've probably been thinking about it a little bit more than I have.
They have. They do. They have invested a lot, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, the story is a little hard to follow. I do encourage people to take a look at the link and read the story, because it is like a little obtuse, a little serpentine.
Mm-hmm. It's like all about how like this rabbi before he died said this was going to happen, and now it's starting to happen. And then this other rabbi said this, and there's all these like, you know, it's sort of, it's like when you go into like a detective's office and there's strings connecting everything.
No cards and strings. I mean, if you get to the no cards and strings scene of a movie, you know you are in it, you know? That's like when you're like, okay, I'm locking into this movie because they've brought me into their strings and cards board.
Why is the media sharing this out loud? Like, is the media trying to get us to believe that the Messiah is here?
Interesting, like some sort of like a strategic campaign to like get Jews to be more like focused on the return or the coming of the
maybe
on that. Man, you know, all I would say is there are better things you could be doing with your time. That's a bit of a stretch. I mean, let's, you know, aim for like celebrating Shabbat. That would be a win.
Yeah.
If like, you know, 10%, 20%, 50% more Jews just like celebrated Shabbat on a regular basis. And I'm not saying that I'm excellent with it. There are many that come and go and that are not properly marked. That seems like a more practical goal than like all of a sudden getting people to focus on the coming of the Messiah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem like a good use of my time.
All right.
It just seems like externalizing the solution. That's what it seems to me to be, you know? Like, I'm sure this is probably heretical to say, but like, I don't care. I mean, I don't know that there's a Sanhedrin that is willing to prosecute me for heresy, because if there were, that would be also a different issue.
There probably is one on the podcast. They probably have their own podcast.
Oh my gosh. That's the most terrifying thing, but it would be interesting listening. I'd be open to it. No, this whole story is like, it's a little bit like the Talmud. It's like, this rabbi says, and then this rabbi says, and then this rabbi says, and then this rabbi. It's like, here's my opinion. And then outside of the margin of that, it's like, actually, he was fucking stupid. Here's what it actually means. Yeah. So it's just like, it's just rabbis arguing. That's the name of the Jewish podcast.
It felt like there was rabbis who think that there's evidence of the Messiah coming. And then this next level took it to, that means the Messiah is coming. It's not very sound logic to me.
No. This is just driven by like a deep desire to sort of demonstrate, you know, a level of piety that nobody was fucking questioning to begin with. You know, I don't doubt that these rabbis firmly believe with their core that the Messiah is coming. But it seems to me like waiting on that solution is less beneficial than taking care of the problem yourself.
It's interesting. You know, there are people who choose to sort of like have issues that have expiration dates. Like they make it more difficult for themselves. It's so easy to be a rabbi and to like just have a vision towards the future that you can share. And that's great, you know, but to put a ticking time bomb into your message is like, it's not wise. Like, don't do that to yourself, you know?
No, why do you think that we all have anxiety? You know, it's like, oh, maybe the anxiety is tied to this. The Messiah's coming. The Messiah's coming. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Too much pressure. Too much pressure.
Too much pressure. Absolutely.
The world is tough enough.
Let me tell you about the next headline, Roy.
Bring it.
Our next headline comes to us from MSN.com. The headline is, Jonah Hill has filed petition to legally change his name. That's the whole story, Roy. This isn't a story. This is just like a sentence on a website.
No. Okay, so the reason I wanted to talk about this is seeming less and less relevant now. No, so like, you know, Jonah Hill, his acting name, his full name is Jonah Hill Feldstein. His sister's in the business, and that's Beanie Feldstein, and she's coming up in her own right, you know, and doing great.
Right.
So I think they probably had some sort of conversation and decided that he should just ditch the Feldstein name since he's known as Jonah Hill anyway, and that she can use the Feldstein name and not have her career tied to his career. That's the negotiation I think that happened here.
Interesting.
There's this other piece I'm curious about, also your thoughts on, you know, the desire to drop a name like Feldstein. And is it like out of concern that it's such a Jewish name? I only knew his name was Jonah Hill Feldstein because of the story where he said he's changing his name so that he doesn't get known that way. But nobody knew him that way because he'd done a good job on the Jonah Hill part.
Right.
So I don't know. What comes up for you with this story that's actually more of a story than a story?
I'm interested to think that you think that they can't share the same last name. Like, I think the Cusack family has done quite well. And so I think that you can have the same last name.
I think that Jonah and Beanie should sit down with Joan and John Cusack and just have a conversation, a mentorship conversation. This is an opportunity for interfaith mentoring. Mm-hmm. You know, the Cusacks are most certainly not Jews. And this would be like a very cool conversation. I would be eager to hear it because, you know, how did they navigate the fact that like Joan Cusack, oh, that's John's sister, or John Cusack, oh, that's Joan's brother, you know? But they also work together a fair amount.
Yeah.
I grew up watching Jonah Hill growing up. I like, you know, got older watching his career happen. So I feel like I like that guy. I like his work. I like his take on life. I'm not opposed to Jonah Hill. I'm just curious, you know, now with his sisters in the biz, how he is going to negotiate the whole sibling in the biz thing. Jonah, if you want to come on the show and talk about it, we'll give you the link.
Absolutely.
We could smoke some weed together and just talk about it. I have siblings. Josh has siblings. This is a space we know well. Sibling dynamics are, in my opinion, the most complicated of human dynamics. I've thought about this a lot, and I feel like sibling dynamics are the most complicated dynamics we navigate. There's so much fucking going on there. And the more siblings, the more complicated.
Mm.
But one sibling is enough to have all of the delights of siblingdom. You're a sibling?
You know, I think the key to being a sibling is to be nice to them.
Yeah, I think that I try to encourage that with my children as siblings to one another. And that's like,
yeah,
a challenging lesson to impart, because when you're siblings, you don't want to hear it from your parents, even if it's fucking obvious or true. But it's because you're like, oh, you don't know, man. You don't know what it's like. It's like, yeah, I do. Like, I existed before you existed.
I like having a sibling because I think it's good to have a shared experience with another person. Because, like, you know, growing up is so unique to you. It's nice to have someone who also experienced a version of it.
It is. A version of it is right, and from a very different...
It's not, but that's the thing. It's not yours, And so you have to just keep it separate, you know?
Right, right. And then if you're lucky, then you'll sometimes get to align stories and actually figure out where the stories overlap and where they don't.
It's your own family Talmud.
It is. It's a complicated book.
So I have to ask you, Roy, how high are you?
Quite.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. This is a no joking around joint, this Tokyo Starfish Chem Fuego joint.
Yeah. I felt there was a moment in the headlines where I kind of lost it.
Yeah, but you know, you made it through.
I made it through. So I appreciate that about this joint.
I'm curious. So, you know, we don't usually go into a second smoke session quite so quick, and I'm not proposing we do. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Like in your real time reaction to like, what do you think another smoke session would do to you right now?
I think I wouldn't do another smoke break.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm saying. I think I'm sort of calling an audible mid-show to be like, maybe we don't need to do another break because this is a hell of a joint. Although, you know, we'll see how we are in 10.
I think that's a good idea. Are you ready for Hanukkah?
Oh, shit. No. My kids have taken it now to like creating lists and sharing those lists with me, which is like, I guess, appreciated and also a little entitled, but that's okay. I'm going to wrestle with it. What about you? Are you ready?
I am ready for it to happen. I got the candles and I have the menorah. I'm sort of not ready for the gift giving, but I will be. Are you...
I'm just having a fucking panic attack right now about Hanukkah. Like a real in-the-moment fucking panic attack because I'm realizing like, oh shit. What I'm trying to explain to my kids this year, and we'll see if it's successful, is like, I think I'm jettisoning this whole eight nights of presents bullshit. I didn't grow up with it. I don't subscribe to it. And I think it's ridiculous. And I think it puts too much burden on parents. And I don't think it's cool. And so I think I am focusing the energy on like one good Hanukkah present for each of them, you know, and then like other little stuff. And then of course, socks, you know, always socks.
Yeah.
In life, Josh, first socks. Socks are such a humble, but yet vital a piece of apparel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that people, and I'm going to say on the one hand, Josh.
Oh boy.
I know that socks are cliche as a Hanukkah gift. On the other hand, I feel strongly that they are one of the greatest symbols of Hanukkah.
Okay. Because it's what it symbolizes the actual socks, or is it symbolizing getting something that you need that is sort of familiar and a universal experience?
That'll get you through like cold, dark nights, just like, for example, candles, you know? I mean, it's not coincidental that these holidays involving lots of candles occur in the darkest part of the year. You know, it's all connected to the winter solstice. You know, it's all connected to December 21st and the shortest day of the year. And that moment where all of a sudden you start to, you know, add a minute a day or something of light, you know, a couple more minutes of light each day. So the days get a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like whether the Hanukkah story is what we're celebrating or whether we sort of delve a little deeper into it, I feel like socks symbolize that spirit.
Speaking about the light at Hanukkah though, Roy, don't you think it's a little odd that like we can have candles now that burn 8 days as a symbol for what you are trying to do with your family? Like what if you just burned one candle that lasted 8 days? And so you could then give your one gift then, and then it's like Hanukkah and it's this massive, like, you kind of have it on autopilot for the whole 8 days. What do you feel about that?
Well, I'm curious, like, what the sages would say. You know, like, this is, like, legit a Talmudic question, man.
And I think we could do it, and it would make the holiday better. Because then, like, we could have it in the window, like they have the trees, you know, and it's just, like, going for 8 days, and it's, like, some crazy thing, you know, that everyone wants to check out, and they drive by and check out all those crazy Hanukkah candles that are like ornate and stuff that last 8 days that I'm about to invent.
Are you talking about one candle or one set of eight candles?
It could be one candle that goes for 8 days, or it could be something a little bit more ornate, but it's a sort of a candle structure that will burn for 8 days. And it could have different, you know, it could look like a traditional Hanukkah, but it could, or it could be a little bit more, you know, interesting.
I mean, from an efficiency point of view, I get it. You know, yeah. It's much more efficient. I think there might be a point to the ritual of like lighting a candle each night for 8 nights. You know, yeah. Why 8? I know the story of why 8, but like, why 8? Was it really 8?
Do you struggle with the story of Hanukkah?
Traditionally, this is a way to not answer your question right away, but traditionally, like, Hanukkah was not a big deal of a holiday. You know, it only became sort of bigger in the last however many few hundred years or so as sort of a rallying cry kind of story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I appreciate the spirit of it, I guess. Complicated times it came from. Judah and the Maccabees. Yikes, man. That's crazy if that's literally true, that that's what happened, that these are real people, which they are. I believe they are all real people and these are all real events. You know, there's a point at where the Torah goes from like the highly figurative to like historical narrative.
Yeah.
And it happens very gracefully. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, fuck, wait, we're talking about real people now? Like people that you could like document existed, not just people who are like metaphorical people. Tricky shit.
The best authors do that. They could weave that balance.
You know, Josh, on the other hand, like as spiritual experience as it could be, Hanukkah is also just like fun. It's like family fun time.
Yeah.
It is lights and it is latkes and it is dreidels and gelt and presents and like festivity in it after a long year might not be such a bad thing.
On the other hand, Roy, what's your feeling about the dreidel?
Oh, I am a big fan of the dreidel.
Really?
It's kind of a cool little toy. You know, they can be done really elegantly. They can be done out of steel. They can be done out of like marble. They can be done out of cool stuff. But we only play with like the shitty plastic ones and occasionally right. A halfway decent wood one, you know, like or a big wood one. I just like that gambling always finds its way into any religion or practice.
Definitely.
It's a game of chance. What do you think about dreidel? Do you like to play it?
I don't like to play it, but I do like the spinning of the dreidels. It's fun to spin dreidels of different weights. I kind of wish that there were more sort of professional class dreidels, you know, that were real weighted and you could have a set that had different characteristics and could take out other dreidels, you know. And maybe we should make dreidels more like Beyblades, you know, and like kind of make the dreidels more about like some sort of like intense game that we could actually gamble on.
BattleBots.
Yeah, exactly. And then what it lands on, like if it lands on, you know, a Gimmel or whatever, like those are multipliers within the BattleBots game that we're playing, the bets we already have going on.
You could design the game so that the letters like both mean what they meant historically, but also have different values or penalties in the game. Like landing on a chance square, you know, like it could be good, could be bad. I like it. This might be your best gefilte tank pitch yet.
I have a question for you though, Roy. Do you think that like the Adelson casinos, do you think that on Hanukkah, those properties should allow for dreidel as like one of the games at the tables? Or like there's a special dreidel table just for those 8 nights. And it's like, you know, a special game that they only bust out for 8 nights. And they kind of make Hanukkah their like jam at the casino. And it's like the dreidel mecca of the world.
That other idea was just the setup.
It's like World Series of Poker.
Holy shit. That's the real gefilte tank pitch right there. That other one was just a fucking red herring. It was a trick.
There's a lot of the dreidels that I think are unexplored.
I'm 100% on board for this idea. Yeah.
On the other hand, Roy, how are you including cannabis in your Hanukkah celebration?
Huh. I mean, aside from smoking it, I don't know. I have not experimented with any sort of infused or edible or food situation because I have kids. So I'm not like, I don't play around with that stuff in the house. Like, I can't. I just don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, like, I think eating latkes is already really enjoyable. I don't need the latkes to be infused. Mm-hmm. But if I got to, you know, have a smoke sesh before we ate latkes, that would be nice.
Absolutely.
I like lighting candles and lighting joints simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
If and when possible, rarely, but possible.
When I was a kid, my grandparents had like an oil Hanukkah. I wonder if there's a way to light cannabis oil in a traditional oil Hanukkah, and then you could sort of like have it as part of the ceremony.
Mm. You got to get a hold of that. Is it too late? Is it gone? What happened?
Are your eyes closed right now?
100%. Now they're totally open. But they were, for the moment there, totally closed. Sometimes I just go to my own special place, Josh. Behind the eyelids. That's just for me. Let me tell you, 27% doesn't tell you anything. I mean, it's not a small percentage, but it's not like a record breaker and irrelevant. Mm-hmm. This thing is not fucking around. How high are you?
I am so high right now, Roy. I'm feeling so good. You know, this is a really nice high.
Yeah, you know, like I mentioned at the top of the show, like I've been a Headband fan since the beginning of Headband. For those who know this strain, I think they'll appreciate the shout out. And for those who don't know this strain, good luck finding it. I'm sure it still exists out there, but I think it's considered a little bit more of a heritage strain at this point, you know? Like straight Headband? Are people still doing it? I haven't seen like a straight Headband joint or anything at the store in like a long time.
Hmm.
But this is not Headband. This is its own creature. It deserves to be known as its own creature, this Chem Fuego.
Do you think that they should be retiring those heritage strains and like not release Headbands, or they should be allowing it still to be sold?
Wait, there should not be a they to determine that at all. That's the problem.
Okay.
No, I mean, if you can find legacy strains, and you know, it's fun sometimes to find like, oh man, like Blue Dream is like a very staple strain, but it's actually, you don't always see it everywhere because it's already kind of a little bit of an older strain, but it's still classic. Mm-hmm. Those are all of my thoughts on
Hanukkah.
We are fucked. We are
fucked. So fucked. What happened to us?
Fucking derailed. Get us out of here, Spock. I've been watching a lot of Star Trek lately.
That's good.
The series Picard on Paramount Plus. Not a plug.
Is it good?
Not a plug at all. But it's very good. Yeah, I really am enjoying it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made me realize like I'm more of a Trekkie than I wanted to probably admit I was. But I'm a pretty big Trekkie, you know?
That's fun.
I have fond admiration for the whole Star Trek universe that is created, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very optimistic show. Like that humanity 300-400 years from now is going to be sort of working together as a species to like make contact with alien civilization out in the universe. That's pretty optimistic considering where we are, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It is a very hope-driven show. Ba, 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 ba.
Can I ask you one other question about Hanukkah?
Yes, please.
What's your feeling about the Hanukkiahs? Do you like having a traditional one that where there's like the shamashes in the center and then you have ones of the same height on, you know, lower than, but, you know, all across the board? Or do you
technically the shamash can be either in the center or on either end.
Right. So do you like one of those? What's your, of the traditional?
I have to tell you, I am a bit of a conservative, a bit of a purist on this.
Uh-huh.
I like the traditional, like, one on the end and then eight in a row in whatever format. The kids used to make them out of like whatever the fuck, bottle caps and shit in preschool, you know?
Yeah.
I popped like tongue depressors and bottle caps and whatever.
Yeah.
I have one I got for my bar mitzvah that's probably stainless steel that is always covered in wax that I, you know, bust out every year. My kids each have their own.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I do like the traditional. I've seen some pretty wild Hanukkiot out there that are pretty fun and interesting, but I don't own a fun and interesting one. But do you? What's your take on it?
If I had to do one of the traditional styles, I would want the shamash on one of the sides and then across. I'm kind of game for any kind of Hanukkah, you know? I like the ones that are a little erotic, you know?
Erotic, yeah?
I mean, you know, there's some beautiful Hanukkahs, you know what I'm saying?
That you really want to light their candles.
But only for 8 nights.
Yeah. It's a pretty wild relationship we have with our Hanukkah because they're with us for our whole lives, you know?
Right.
And it's like every year you're like, all right, come back out. This is your time. This is your time to shine, you know?
Put you in the window for 8 days and then I won't see you again for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's a little sad when you put it that way.
I mean, you know.
Maybe people should leave their Hanukkiot out all year somewhere in the house just as decoration, just so that it still gets to be noticed and appreciated, just not used in the center, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, I know I'm doing a lot of anthropomorphizing here, but I think that they would appreciate it.
Definitely. Well, Roy, it's almost the end of the year, and it's time for us to share our favorite tweets of the year. And I have to say, put down the phone, Roy, because I just want to tell you that I think you're doing a great job managing the Twitter. You're having a lot of conversations.
I am. There's a community of people. It's an opportunity to try and use this platform before it's dead to, have conversations, meet interesting people, do strange things. It is a source of fun and also consternation.
I just want to say you're doing a great job managing the Twitter, but I had a favorite tweet of the year. Can I tell you about it?
Bring it on.
I remember, Roy, when you were talking to the Manischewitz people, and that was a great tweet.
That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Okay, we're back. All right.
Ooh.
Do you know what's after Hanukkah?
I don't know. Whoever's chasing it.
It's 2023. I mean, next year is just around the corner.
Dude, I cannot even, man. It's a good thing it's an odd year because I can't even.
Here's the thing, is that once it becomes 2023, like my devotion to 5787 is sort of like...
83, yeah.
Yeah, my devotion to 5783 sort of goes out the window and I'm focused on 2023. You know, it's hard to have two different years.
Oh, shit. It is. You know what? It is. Nobody ever talks about how much emotional labor is involved in having to maintain two fucking calendars at the same time.
It's a lot of work.
When I have the opportunity to inform non-Jews what year it is in our book, it always gets a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh yeah, like happy 2023. It's like, oh yeah, thank you. It's actually the year 5783 in my calendar, but you know, I get it. We're using yours for now.
Do you maintain two different New Year's resolutions?
You know, it's hard enough to maintain one set of resolutions. Mm-hmm. Why give yourself two opportunities to break them, to fail yourself?
Right.
I mean, I like the opportunity to check in sort of spiritually at the high holidays. And mm-hmm. I like the opportunity to sort of check in with myself in the new year, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day.
Yeah.
You know, even though it's just totally arbitrary. The calendar is just made up. These days are just made up. It doesn't matter. But like, it still does to mark a moment that sort of is a period of closure.
Right.
You know, so you can say to yourself, like, that happened then,
mm-hmm.
you know, instead of it's all happening at the same time.
It's just a timestamp to you.
It's a timestamp. It is. But it's like, hey, you know, if you're going to take a timestamp, you might as well just like reflect for a moment.
So I have to ask you, Roy, do you have any predictions for 2023?
Oh, do I ever, Josh? Do I ever? I have prognostications of all kinds. I love predicting the future. It's a great hobby. Do you?
I am going to make a prediction right now.
Okay.
And that is that my prediction for 2023 is that the Messiah isn't coming in 2023.
Josh, let me tell you something. If the Messiah comes in 2023, it's going to be largely despite your bet.
But that's the thing, is I just identified if the Messiah does come, then what does that make me? That's kind of frightening.
It's true. You know, I think it's a bold prediction. We'll see what happens. My prediction is that there's going to be elections in Israel again.
Okay.
You know, I think the Bibi coalition is not going to hold. I think he's a master at getting power but not holding it. Mm-hmm. I think Israel is going to continue to be a complicated place to watch politically. And they'll be going back to elect new government by the end of the year.
All right. Well, then that's a good prediction, man.
We'll see what happens. If I'm wrong, so fucking who cares? But if I'm right, who cares?
Let me tell you about my 2023 cannabis prediction.
Lay it on me, man.
I think in the year 2023, the cannabis baking stuff is going to get figured out. And I'm going to have a dispensary co-branded credit card where I get points and I won't actually be spending any money on cannabis. All I'll be doing is accruing debt on my credit card, and by getting all these crazy points through my cannabis co-branded credit card, and I'll get all my cannabis and reward points by the end of 2023.
Wow, that's an optimistic prognostication. I like it. I like the spirit behind it. Keep up that optimism.
Do you think that the banking stuff will get done?
Oh, I do actually think the banking stuff will get advanced significantly. I don't know if it'll all get figured out, but there will definitely be some big moves.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden you'll be able to use like fucking ATMs and dispense. You mean use your credit card to make purchases at dispensaries, right, for example. Even that level of banking breakthrough would be good. You know, not having to deposit all of your annual sales in cash at the tax office and be like a ripe target because you're walking in with $2 million in cash, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Stupid shit like that should get solved. I also think 2023 is going to be a year for like really exciting growth in all of the markets that have recently legalized. Mm-hmm. And so all of the neighboring states are going to see just how much more revenue they're not getting and they're losing of their own people because they're not taxing and regulating this thing that everybody wants. So I think legalization is going to move forward in a big way. And it tends to be politically one of the few actual bipartisan issues. There are definitely Republicans who oppose it. There's not a lot of Democrats, if any, who do, but there are still some who don't really love it. So it's actually an issue that, in spite of all the bullshit, might be able to move forward. So yeah, I think we're surprisingly, unexpectedly optimists.
I always knew you were an optimist.
Well, I hate myself for it.
So I have to ask you, Roy,
please.
How high are you?
More so than I expected at this point.
Yeah.
You know, the headband is still tight.
Yeah. So it's mostly in your head?
That's where I seem to keep noticing it.
Yeah.
Every so often, it'll be like a wave through my body, and I'll be like, whoa. You know, you can kind of feel it moving through you.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm feeling pretty good, and I'm feeling like I'm going to hit this again later, and I'm going to love it even more.
I have the similar feelings with a little bit of a layer of trepidation on top of that. You know, I mean, like, you know, I'm no stranger to joints, and this one is surprisingly potent to me right now. I don't know if it's the mix of its own terpene situations or sort of where I am energy-wise at the end of a long day, but boy, oh, boysy.
So would you grow it?
Oh my gosh, I would love the permission to grow it. I think I have to ask the plant first. It's a pretty dominant plant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually curious to figure out like more about their production and like why they chose the strain and who the grower was and stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the level of impressed I am with this flower. I want to know who grew it.
Well, Tokyo Starfish grew it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Let's figure out what's going on over there.
Okay.
It certainly has an awesome name.
It does.
As far as cannabis products go, kind of love it.
Well, if you love it and you love us, rate and review Wondering Jews wherever you get the podcast.
Thanks for riding along this one. This was a bumpy and at times destabilizing, but also deeply enjoyable strain/conversation.
Amen to that. And until next time, I'm Josh.
I am Roy. Happy Hanukkah and
keep wondering.